If you missed yesterday, or maybe you don't listen all the way to the end of the podcast, go back and listen to the end of yesterday's podcast. The Will Ferrell story is fantastic. Trust me, I'm reacting to it. I'm recording this just seconds after doing Friday's episode, and I was reading the Will Ferrell article cold, and it just hit me in a way that I was like, wow. Trust me, go back and listen to it. It's fun. Trevor Noah was joking about Rudy Giuliani and said, can we acknowledge what a fall this has been? This man went from being an American hero to now sounding like a telemarketer selling a coup. Apparently, nobody was responding to Rudy Giuliani's calls during some of the adventures late in the Trump administration. Trevor said, Rudy made so many unanswered calls, the iPhone started labeling him as spam. And you know, this is another example of how historic President Trump really was. At any other time in U.S. history, if the president's lawyer called someone, they would take that call. But when Trump's vampire lawyer called people, everyone was like, tell him I'm not here. Yeah, tell him I went camping and died. And not that I'm encouraging it, because I'm not, but if you're going to try to overturn an election, maybe don't leave voicemails. Also, it's 2022. Text, who leaves voicemails? Come on, Rudy, just hit him with a quick late night. You up for subverting democracy? Eggplant emoji, red hat emoji, vampire emoji. Come on, Rudy, keep up with the times. Good job, Trevor Noah. Ricky Gervais has praised offensive comedy in a new tweet. Oh, my. So on Monday, comedian Robin Ince wrote on Twitter, what I find odd about the offensive comedy debate is it seems to say comedy must be allowed to be offensive, but it is wrong for people to be offended. Make up your mind. Ricky Gervais tweeted back, everyone is allowed to offend and everyone is allowed to be offended. It's a good system. Ricky had previously defended his special to The Spectator, saying, my target wasn't trans folk, but trans activist ideology. I've always confronted dogma that oppresses people and limits freedom of expression. Ricky also told The One Show, I think that's what comedy is for, really, to get us through stuff. And I deal in taboo subjects because I want to take the audience to a place that hasn't been before, even for a split second. Most offense comes from when people mistake the subject of a joke with the actual target. I deal with everything, and I think we second guess the audience too much. The Vanderbilt Hustler reviewed a recent John Mulaney concert. Let's check in with John Mulaney concerts and see how they're going. The article did point out that any jokes referenced here were done from memory, so this might not be exactly how John phrased things. And again, the chain of custody here is John Mulaney said something, someone kind of remembered it, and now I'm delivering it. Might not be the best version. Anyway, John Mulaney's opening line, here's how problematic I am. I announced I'm having a baby and the reviews are mixed. A few jokes in, the comedian made fun of how everyone likes Bo Burnham better now. He then talked about the intervention. We've heard about that before. He name-dropped and impersonated Nick Kroll, Bill Hader, Natasha Lyonne, and Fred Armisen. Mulaney said, oh yeah, it was a star-studded affair. It was like We Are the World for alternative comedians over 40. Then he talked about rehab, and he said Pete Davidson changes his phone number every month. Mulaney saves them under celebrity pseudonyms like Al Pacino. After I'd finally been given medicine to fall asleep because I've been awake for multiple days and was being difficult, my nurse woke me up because she saw my phone ringing with 5 missed calls from Oscar winner Al Pacino. Sounds like it was a really good show from Chortle, James Corden. We'll have President Joe Biden on. This has been recorded already. The encounter is part of the Take a Break segment of the Late Late Show in which James Corden takes over someone's job for a while. No, he wasn't allowed the nuclear codes. But he filled in for the president's assistant. The footage will air during a special week of shows to be broadcast from Freemasons Hall in London. That's this week. Other guests appearing in the show, Vin Diesel, Jamie Dornan, Billie Eilish, Ed Sheeran, John Boyega, David Harbour, Alanis Morissette, Sam Smith, and Tessa Thompson. No, Joe Biden didn't do carpool karaoke, which would have been amazing, but Lizzo did. Salon asked Michael Che, what's better for you, Michael Che, sketch or stand-up? Che said, nothing's better than stand-up, but I do like sketch as well. I do like building in the world and fleshing out, and you really get an opportunity to see people that you believe in, that you think is funny, put them in a position to really score, and everybody's scoring. It's not a contest, it's a community. I do love that sketch offers in a way that stand-up may not, because it's just me with a microphone. I love both, but stand-up's my first love. Then Salon started talking about wardrobe and sketch. You get to get those fits off. You get the wardrobe. Che said, you get to be silly. It's like you're playing dress up and really kind of launch in. You could wear the comedy. Salon, I feel like you wear what you wear at work a lot, though. You ain't wearing no crazy costumes. Che said, that's a fact. There's like a few things where I'll play a little bit, but even if it's not me, if it's just being on a set where you kind of dress up and see through it, it's like designing an apartment or something. It's kind of a rush. And getting something in your head and seeing it through and realizing make it look as close as possible to the original vision. Man, it's kind of cool to watch. Salon. It's like the history of comedy parallels with the history of hip hop when it comes to fashion evolution. Some of the first hip hop artists wore like these wild ass leotards and yellow leather biker jackets. Then you get Run DMC coming out with Adidas sweatsuits and shell toes. Comedians back in the day, Eddie Murphy had the leather suits on and all that. And you just come out with a pair of butters like Effit. Chase said, that's absolutely correct. Because I remember, I think it was my first or second week at SNL, I met Steve Martin. He was the biggest comedian in the world at one point. He retired from stand-up. He was doing football stadiums. So he asked me, he was like, when you go out, when you do stand-up, what do you wear? Which is a strange question, because this is Steve Martin. I'm like, I don't know. I wear this. I wear a hoodie. He's like, really? I always wore a suit. I always felt like a performer was supposed to look better than the audience. Adi Bryant spoke to Variety, and they asked her, looking back at your time on SNL, is there one sketch that you're proud of that you got on the show? Her choice, Dyke and Fats, because Kate McKinnon and I were still new. It felt edgy to talk about ourselves in that way on a show on NBC. That was an early win. How about one that got away? She said there was one of my first season called Foam Party, and they built a massive tank so they could fill the whole set with foam. I played a woman who lost all her belongings in the foam. People were dancing in a nasty club, and I was like, excuse me, have you seen my whatever? Paraphrasing here, it ate it in dress rehearsal because I was in a short little wig, huge glasses, and covered in foam. The audience was like, who is that? What's happening? I think it would work now because they would be like, that's 80. We know, we trust. That one haunts me. Variety said, 80 seemed very close with newer cast members like Bowen and Sarah Sherman. Did being a veteran make you want to take people under your wing? 80 said, I don't think of myself as a mentor. When I started the show, I was 25. I'd been doing Second City, but I hadn't written for TV or been on TV. There was such a massive learning curve. I remember seeing Fred Armisen, Kenan Thompson, Jason Sudeikis, and Bill Hader and being like, not only are they writing funny things, but there's a whole level of technical knowledge to live television you have to learn. It's shared, I don't want to say a trauma, but it's like a trauma and a triumph. It took me a long time to find a healthy middle ground with that and not feel shot to the moon and shot down to hell every time. The Minneapolis Comedy Festival wraps up today. Rosebud Baker, grandchild of former Secretary of State James Baker. She's at the House of Comedy in the Mall of America tonight. Tickets as low as $17. That's not bad at all. That's not, no, you should go. Two shows, 7 and 9:30. Joe Lysette tweeted, someone came to my tour show a few weeks back and was offended by one of the jokes, and their perfectly understandable response to this was to call the effing police. To be fair to them, the fuzz were, I haven't heard fuzz in a million years. To be fair to them, the fuzz were very nice about it, but they felt they had a duty to investigate. This involved me writing a statement explaining the context of the joke for them. I particularly enjoyed putting the words giant donkey penis, clean that up, into a message to a police detective. Charmed and hopefully amused, the Rozzers have since closed the matter. You'll be pleased to know the joke, which I consider to be one of the best I've ever written, remains firmly and proudly in the show. The tour continues until September, unless I'm jailed. From Sportskeeda, your home for comedy news, Conor McGregor shared a FaceTime chat with Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart was visiting the Black Forge Inn in Ireland, owned by Conor McGregor, you know, the UFC guy. Kevin Hart FaceTimed Conor McGregor, the UFC guy, to share his gratitude for the hospitality received and also commended the Irishman's crew for representing him well. Time out. Now, Kevin Hart, do you do this? Like, if you go to Applebee's, do you, like, FaceTime the Applebee's manager? Or do you FaceTime famous people who then leak it to Sportskeeda or however this got out so everybody gets some free press? I'm going to guess B. Conor McGregor seemed to be in the middle of a deep tissue massage and claimed to be prepping for a second training session of the day in France when Kevin Hart FaceTimed him. McGregor lauded the comedian for being a hard worker and also congratulated the immensely successful star on the launch of his new tequila brand. What a coincidence! You happen to walk into Conor McGregor's restaurant, you FaceTime him. First of all, how do you have Conor McGregor's number? Do you ask the manager at the bar? Will the manager at the bar give anyone Conor McGregor's number? Anyway, you wind up on FaceTime, and Conor McGregor happens to know Kevin Hart has a new tequila brand. Even George Lopez is like, tap the brakes. The former UFC double champ told Hart, yeah, I'm here getting a massage. I'm about to get my second training session of the day in. I'm working hard. Same as yourself. I appreciate and respect hard workers, bro. That's what you are. Congrats on the tequila. Congrats on everything you're doing, solo shows in Ireland. All the respect in the world for you, and enjoy yourself on my premise, the Black Forge Inn at Dublin, 12 Ireland. And then Kevin Hart, who, if you follow him on Twitter, is so corny with the hashtags. Kevin Hart for real tweets, major shout out to my brother, the notorious MMA, and his amazing staff and team at the Black Forge Inn. The food and hospitality was unreal. We had a blast. We appreciate you guys having our tequila on deck as well for us. What a coincidence. I'm definitely coming back. So much love and amazing energy in Dublin. Hashtag reality check. Hashtag comedic rock star stuff. Hashtag hard work tastes different. Don't kid a kidder, Kevin Hart. That's your comedy news for today. Follow the show for free on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your shows. This Kevin Hart thing. I just want to throw up. It's so obviously coordinated marketing. Just stop, guys.